Okay. We will call the Pension Commission to order. We have, the Senate is currently in session. The House will be going into session shortly. Today, what we're going to do is to have a presentation on the legislation that Representative Dabney and Senator Dibble have prepared, and I understand that there are some amendments. What we're going to do today is simply to get the information about the bill and proposed amendments. We're not going to take any action today. As I understand, there still is at least one issue that isn't completely resolved yet. And I think everyone needs to understand that it's important for the parties here, City of Minneapolis, the two funds, to come to an agreement, which they've been working on very, very hard, and trying to get that all resolved. But also, there's going to have to be the Pension Commission and the state's perspectives that are going to have to come into play here in resolving this once and for all. This is an issue that's been out there a long time. We need to find a resolution to it. And so what we're going to do today is start the process here and have the presentation. At such point that the commission is ready to move forward, members, my position is that we would, if we're going to move forward in anything, it would need to be an amendment to the omnibus bill that we've already passed out of the commission, rather than traveling as a separate bill. Representative Kahn, I know, has been instrumental in the past of having our custom and usage here, that we don't have a bunch of independent pension bills traveling out there separately, that pension bills need to be put together in one omnibus bill that the Pension Commission receives and reviews. So that will be our plan once, if the Pension Commission is willing to move things forward, that will be the way in which we will move. So at this point, let me first call on Mr. Martin to give us a little bit of an introduction here, and then we'll call on Representative Dabney and Senator Dibble. Mr. Martin.
Okay, members, I want to quickly draw your attention to what is in your packets. There are three documents from the commission staff. One is a general summary of blind amendment 11-12A, and that general summary gives you a fairly quick view of all three articles that are in the blind amendments. The initial article is related to the fire plan. The second article is related to the police plan. You'll note that there's a considerable amount of repetition of provisions. These are two separate consolidations that are under one piece of legislation. One could occur under the legislation without the other. And then the third article, which is summarized on the very bottom of page 2, is a set of conforming changes, mostly cleaning out of statutes references to the two relief associations if the consolidations do occur. There's also a section-by-section summary attached to that general summary document. The next item you have in your packets is the actual language of the blind amendment 11-12A. This is the three articles. Fire is the initial article, police is the second, and the conforming changes are the third. This is a voluntary consolidation that requires the approval of a number of entities, the board of the particular relief association, the membership of the relief association, and the PERA board of trustees, the recipient benefit plan administrators, and the City of Minneapolis. And if all of those entities then approve, the consolidation would be scheduled for the end of December of this year. It's a pretty straightforward consolidation in lots of ways compared to other consolidations that have occurred with PERA, police, and fire. I think the amendments that are in the third document, as they come up, will will give you some flavor of the areas where there are some massaging that may be needed. And that's the third document in your packets. It's a memo from me to Senators Pogomiller and Dibble and Representatives Kahn and Davney. Covers the four attached amendments. These are the provenance of each. Going from back to front, 4A is one that was put together by me based on going through the bill and finding a couple of areas that needed to be tightened up or cleaned up. The other three are from parties to the sets of agreements that led to this bill. The City of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Fire, since the consolidation agreement document only got to me very, very late yesterday. And then Mr. Rice on behalf of the Minneapolis Fire and Representative Kahn. So you have those documents. These documents have been on the commission website and have been circulated most of the morning, which is about as quick as we could get the turnaround on these. As you'll note, there's no general memo from the commission staff. There just was insufficient time to put together a full analysis for you. And even if we had, we probably couldn't have gotten it copied in the time that existed. So, members, that gives you some sense of what's here. The two authors may want to fill you in on the process, and then the interested parties can comment.
Okay. Representative Dabney, Senator Dibble, I don't know who wants to go first, but if you want to go ahead and present your proposal.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start by thanking the Chair and the Commission for convening for today's hearing. As I understand it, for a number of decades, the Pension Commission has had a goal of consolidating all of the public employee pension plans in the state under the state. And this is a significant move then towards that reform effort with the voluntary agreement by the two Minneapolis funds and the city to consolidate here. They have done significant work, and I think both the funds and the city are to be credited with hard work that was, I think, difficult and contentious at times, but has ended up with a resolution that I believe is fair to the beneficiaries and protects the assurances that they need going forward, both for the beneficiaries and their decedents in the future, as well as protecting the city and getting the city out of the pension business and accomplishing a significant goal of the Pension Commission consolidation.
Senator Dibble?
I echo Representative Dabney's thanks to you and the Pension Commission for pulling together this late session meeting. This has been the source of a lot of very intensive effort in conversation and negotiation, and I commend the parties sitting behind us here who have worked very, very hard and I think come to a very mutually agreeable and beneficial agreement, and a lot of shared goals. Governance reform, as Representative Dabney touched on, a reduction of risk and exposure and volatility for all parties going forward, allowing for the ongoing organizational entity, a fraternal organization, because, of course, these funds are over 100 years old each, and a lot of the beneficiaries, particularly the very senior members of the class, of the pool, turn to this organization for a lot of their needs, so an ongoing entity separate and outside of its pension and health care benefits that it provides is important. Some consideration for how to take care of the health care benefit separate and outside of the pension benefit that the city will manage and take over was a good outcome as well. I think this is a good outcome. Nothing clarifying and crystallizing like a deadline, and that seems to have had the tonic effect that we sought in pulling this together. So I appreciate the time and look forward to diving into some of the details here.
Are you going to request somebody from the city or representatives of the pension funds to talk about some of the specifics in the bill?
That would be the best.
Okay.
That, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Martin, to go through the details. It is intricate and involved, as he's indicated, but the funds in the city, as I understand, are prepared to testify as well.
Okay. Well, we'll first hear then from the parties that were involved in this negotiation to come forward and outline your what you would have us know about this agreement that has been in the works for a long time. And we will also be, of course, asking the fund to come forward and address their perspective on this. And then we will also give opportunity anybody else in the audience who wishes to be heard. We've had a couple of people that have contacted us. But everyone needs to understand that we have to be adjourned here before 1 o'clock, so we'd appreciate it if everybody would be concise and to the point as much as you can. So I don't know who wants to go first. I'll let you folks decide the order. Councilmember Johnson, did you want to speak first, maybe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Barbara Johnson, Minneapolis City Council President, and we too appreciate being able to join you today, and thank you for the courtesy of this hearing. I'm joined by Susan Siegel, our city attorney, and Heather Johnston, our budget officer, interim financial officer for the city. We spent obviously several years trying to get this agreement together. A hefty weekend this last weekend, long hours trying to come to agreement with the funds about the details of this consolidation, and I will let our staff speak to those details, but it is I think a turning point for us and the funds to be able to try and put this matter to bed, to give security and assurance to both sides about our obligations going forward and people's ability to count on an assured pension. So I hope you give it good consideration. Thank you.
Well, maybe I
would you please each of you identify yourself for the record so we have it on tape?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Brian Rice, Rice, Michaels, and Walther. I'm the General Counsel of the Minneapolis Police Relief Association and the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. With me at the table are Larry Ward, the president of the Minneapolis Police Relief Association, and Wally Shermer, who's the executive secretary of the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble and Representative Dabney introduced a bill for voluntary consolidation of the these two associations with the Public Employees Retirement Association. That introduction of that bill commenced a very intense negotiation that started last Friday with police, ending on Sunday with a agreement for the funds to support consolidation with PRA under several important terms, and that after that, city began negotiation with Minneapolis firefighters that went from Monday to just yesterday to reach terms. The bill that the version that Mr. Martin has, along with accompanying amendments, hopefully would effectuate the terms of that agreement. But in general, Mr. Chairman, the funds have agreed to do a consolidation on a voluntary basis with PRA, subject to approval by their boards, their majority of their entire membership, with approval by PRA. There are several important terms in those agreements. Mr. Martin now has those about the continuation of the association for both associations to continue as fraternal associations. They do both have assets that are member assets that are separate from pension fund assets. There are obviously a long, long history. The fire fund is 125 years old this year. To the best of our knowledge, it's the oldest continuous fund in the country, And the police fund, created in 1890, has also got a long, long history. The commission should know this. The funds have been and are currently in litigation with the city of Minneapolis over benefits. We will continue to remain in litigation with the city under the terms of our agreement until full consolidation is effective, hopefully on January 1st of next year. One of the objectives of this legislation would be a means to resolve that lawsuit. If the funds can consolidate successfully on the terms that they negotiated, the lawsuit goes away. We think that that's a benefit for the members potentially as well as the city. A principal issue that comes up in this bill is what the benefit level will be. And quite frankly, that is a central but not only issue in these negotiations. The agreement provides for a set amount of value of units. A unit is a measurement of pension benefits for these funds. Members accrue units based on their years of service. A unit is defined as 1/80th of the monthly salary. And getting to a definition of what that value is very important. In these negotiations, an ultimate number it was ascribed by the Police Association of $64,000, and that number, which has been subject of some press discussion, was based on a calculation of what the unit value was before the litigation, a beginning point, which the association assumes for the purposes of 2001 would be $54,000 base salary plus its post-retirement or 13th check benefit. And in order to basically compensate the fund for converting from a system of an escalated pension, which is tied to the salary negotiated for top patrol officers and top grade firefighters, converting that amount of an escalated pension into the PRA benefit is really the challenge that presented the association. We worked with our actuary, Mark Meyer, looked at numbers that the city had and believed that the step up from what would be a pre-lawsuit number of 54,000 to in 4 years a number of 64,000 would appropriately compensate the members for the relinquishment of the escalator clause, the 13th check, 102% benefit, 110% benefit, and would also deal with, in essence, giving up their current rights. One thing I think the commission should know, you're dealing with about 1,400 lives here. The average age for service retirees is about 72. The average age for widows is in their early 80s. About a third of the benefit recipients of this plan are widows. Currently, under the order that Judge Poston has, their benefits are slightly more than or either slightly more or slightly under $2,000 a month. This is a non-coordinated plan. It's a basic plan. In other words, these members did not contribute into the Social Security system. And so for many of the members and a very large number of the surviving spouses, they do not receive Social Security, or if they receive it, they receive it in a very small amount. And if they do receive it, there's also an offset. So for many of these people that Mr. Shermer and Mr. Ward are looking out for, you're primarily looking at older, vulnerable women and older men that look to this pension as a primary or potentially sole source of their pension benefits. And for people to say that a $2,000 pension to an 83 or 84-year-old woman is excessive or generous or unearned, in my opinion, just simply wouldn't be true. Likewise, for the members of this association that have worked and provided service to the city of Minneapolis, we believe these pensions are fair and reasonable. This is a very unique plan. It's a every member contributed the same amount to get the pension, and every member received the same amount. And up until 1994, the contributions made by the police into their plan, into the fire, into their plan was the same, and the benefits that they received were the same. The plan started to vary in the mid-90s when firefighters received overtime, and they actually contributed more and received more. And later on in the earlier part of the 2000, when police had overtime, they started to contribute more and receive more, and the firefighters fell behind. And so while their beginning points today are different, for the vast majority of the history of this plan, all the members, both police and fire, contributed in the same and received the same, and that's an important equity consideration that the Pension Commission, as it looks at that bill, we would ask that you look at. And Pension Commission has policies on these things, on issues like this, and it's very important as you sort out these equities and move forward that they be considered. So in this context of these old plans, the city, who requested Representative Dabney and Senator Dibble to introduce this bill, and I should say it's their initiative to pursue this legislation, which we are now joining. It's important that the members of this association are not coming here looking at giving up their rights, but we have reached an agreement with the city. We support the bill. We support it on the terms that that have been agreed to. And it's very, very important that those dollar numbers, although there was a story in the Star and Tribune today that may give some people some concern, we'd really ask the commission, its staff, other legislative staffers to look into these numbers. And I think when the commission and others do look in, they'll find that they're appropriate in the context that they're awarded. There are a couple other issues that are important to deal with. One is an over 25-year account that needs a resolution about how that's going to be dealt with. It's in essence a non-qualified plan that has whose assets are for the members that are held in trust by Wells Fargo in one case and Union Bank and Trust in another, and how that administration is going to be dealt with, I think, may still need to be get resolved. The continuation of the Fraternal Association is important, and there are a number of other issues that I think can be worked through. But it would be historic. This legislation would effectuate a policy that the Pension Commission articulated in 1987 when it created the voluntary path to consolidation. And I believe at this point 44 of the 47 relief associations have done this. This would bring to 46 the number if it was done, leaving only, I believe, Senator Rosen's plan out as an independent plan. And I think that that is a good policy. It would bring what we think is an appropriate benefit adjustment to our members. It would bring substantial relief to the city of Minneapolis, but relief that is nonetheless needed. Minneapolis has carried a pension overburden, unlike other cities in the state, and it's certainly been the city's goal. And to wrap up, it would resolve litigation and bring certainty to the members as well as to the city, which is a goal that they've desired for a long time. And given the possibility of market variations that we've seen, the 100-year flood in the stock market has happened, twice in the last decade. And so given that instability in markets, it simply makes more sense. And we do think the opportunity presents itself in large measure because of changes that happened for two changes primarily. The stock market has been very strong, and both of these funds have had significant investment gains over the last year, bringing them up to what we think is nearly the same level as the PRA plan. Secondly, the changes made in last year's pension reform bill made it more affordable for this fund to go in and basically make a benefit exchange that would be fair. So with that, I might ask Mr. Ward or Mr. Shermer to make some additional comments. And we do have our actuary here and other staff members that could provide the commission with additional information. Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Ward. Mr. Chairman and pension members. I want to thank you for taking
please,
this time.
Please identify yourself for the tape so we have your voice on tape here.
Is this better?
Yeah, please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, Larry Ward, President, Minneapolis Police Relief Association.
Thank you.
been president of the association for approximately 10 years. During this period of time, we've had a very contentious relationship with the city of Minneapolis, back and forth with our pension issues. Back in 2004, we negotiated with the city of Minneapolis to extend our full funding date from 2010 to 2020. During the first effort in the legislature, it was turned down by the city of Minneapolis. This would have resulted in quite a savings for Minneapolis. It's like extending the mortgage, giving them extra time to pay for the full funding of the pension. The following year, we came back to the legislature, and with the help of some of the legislatures, this was passed. The city of Minneapolis recognized that the extra years of full funding date would help with their financial liabilities. And also, yes, there was a benefit for the membership. We received one unit for our efforts. During this period of time, we've been back and forth. I've been negotiating off and on with the city probably the last 5 years to resolve this issue. I think this is the closest we've ever been. We finally agree that the terms that were negotiated work not only for our membership but also for the city of Minneapolis. And because of the age of our pensioners, we have some real concern about the continuing membership of this board. It, with the age of everybody, I think we have to look at, when we get down the line, who's really going to run this pension. But I think you're going to hear from one of our younger members who, because of maybe self-interest, have different ideas how this pension should go. But I think over the years, what we've established here, and we recognize the responsibility of this pension towards the city of Minneapolis, and it's not our idea to hold Minneapolis liable for extraordinary financial liabilities, but to try to work with them to solve this on a tax basis for the citizens of Minneapolis. I owned a home in Minneapolis for 44 years. I know how the tax base can really affect you, so it's been a problem. The only thing I would ask this commission, I think it's time because of for our older members to maybe have some stability in their lives and to live out their final years with a little dignity. And I think with this consolidation, we can achieve this, and we can work hand in hand with the city to get to this level. And we have been. The negotiations were tough, but I think we achieved the fair a settlement. And I want to thank you very much, Mr. Shermer.
Mr. Shermer.
Thank you. My name is Walter Shermer, and I'm the Executive Secretary of the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. We've been in discussions with the city for the last 3 or 4 days, and our position is that we wanted equal treatment under this consolidation, and currently we're one unit less than the police are. We have that unit in place once we reach 110% funding, but with our consolidation that won't happen. So what we're looking for, I'm thinking, is maybe an amendment to add that extra unit so that it's an equal benefit for both police and fire. As was mentioned earlier, we've been virtually the same in all respects of salary and benefits for about 98% of 125 years or 122 years. So we're looking to maintain that. And we couldn't get that extra unit in the negotiations with the city, but they said that they would not oppose us pursuing that at the legislature, and if we're successful with it, then that will add that extra unit that makes this equal and fair consolidation for both. I don't have anything else to add. I echo what Larry has been saying. This is an issue that's been up front for many, many years, and we're finally to a point where it could work, but it's all up to you folks at this point, and we'd appreciate anything you can do to help. Thank you.
I think it's very important for all of you to indicate to us what are the issues that still need further clarification or resolution. Mr. Shermer, you've indicated one that I just learned something more about that here earlier this morning. And I'd like to have you clearly outline, all of you, for us, what are the issues from your perspective, be it the city or the two funds, what are the issues that are unresolved? Mr. Rice, you mentioned there were a couple of issues that still
Mr.
are
Chairman.
Out there. I want to make sure we're clear on, from the perspective of each of you, what are the issues that still are out there?
Mr. Chairman, just quickly, the one and is, as Mr. Shermer indicated, 43rd unit, I believe Representative Kahn had an amendment to deal with that. The agreement was that the firefighters would offer an amendment and have it discussed before the Pension Commission, and the city wouldn't oppose it. If I could just add, the legislature actually has enacted a 43rd unit for the firefighters. That happened in 2008. In Chapter 423A, I think it's 019, that said when the fund became 110% funded, they could get the 43rd unit. The issue here, of course, is that if the fund's consolidated, they'll never have that opportunity. So we believe it's appropriate, and that's one issue. I think the other issues, frankly, Mr. Chairman, are really if we can work with Mr. Martin. He's been working incredibly hard. I can't sit here right now and think that there's a problem that couldn't be resolved with discussions between Mr. Martin and the staff and the city, to my knowledge. I did mention this 25-year account, although Ms. Johnston will testify now. I think we've worked that out at the table here, so maybe we should hear from her.
Well, Mr. Rice, I think it would be helpful if you could articulate in writing what those unresolved issues are from your perspective. And I'm going to ask Ms. Vanek to also indicate to us any issues that she sees that are still not resolved in her mind or the PRA board mind. And we're going to be asking Mr. Barton to do the same thing. And as I said at the outset, you are the principal parties here, and I'm pleased that you made a lot of progress in resolving this issue and coming to some agreement. I just want to make sure that any remaining issues are addressed. But it's also going to be important from the state's perspective, from the Pension Commission's perspective, are the issues we're concerned about, have they been adequately addressed in the language that we have before us? And that's the question we're going to be posing to Mr. Martin and the folks who represent the various state perspectives on this. So other questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Were we going to hear from Ms. Johnston from the city of Minneapolis?
She did speak at the outset. And is there anything?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I stepped out for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Johnson. It's Johnston. Okay.
Yeah.
Ms. Johnston, did you wish to?
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Heather Johnston, the interim city financial officer for the city. As Mr. Rice did say, we have resolved the issues other than the additional unit, which I think Representative Kahn is planning on addressing in an amendment. But the primary outstanding issues that we want to work through with staff would include the health care savings account. It will remain, the city agrees it's fine for it to remain where it currently is, and the city will administer the health and dental benefits for these two funds. And I think there was just a confusion because there's two types of accounts, and so the city is comfortable with and in agreement with the funds on how those will be administered. There are other issues that are more technical. Ms. Vanek will talk to you about some of those. We are not objecting to any of the amendments that she's mentioning as well, but I'll let her speak to that. I just want to also add that the city is facing a $22.9 million levy next year for these two funds without this legislation. And as some of the testifiers have already indicated, it's really important for us to be able to stretch out this obligation and to make sure that there's a sustainable plan for these two funds going forward into the future. And so that's what why we're here before you today, why you sense the urgency in these conversations, and we would really just appreciate your time today and want to thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Johnston. Ms. Siegel, did you have anything further to add?
Mr. Chair, Susan Siegel, Minneapolis City Attorney, and no, I'm just here. I'm willing to answer questions. I know there's a lot of business in this building today.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Ms. Johnston. Would you go back to that your last statement about the city would be responsible for levying?
Ms. Johnston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the city currently and under current law has approximately a $22.9 million levy for these two funds. That's about $17.7 million for police and $5.2 million for fire. And this legislation would significantly reduce those levies.
Representative Murphy?
And if we do nothing, then this levy will continue?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that is correct.
For how long?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the police relief in current law has an amortization date of 2020.
And the fire?
The fire has a rolling 15-year amortization, and so that will depend on when their full funding. Fire is actually very close to full funding currently. We believe they're fully funded, and so the levy requirement is we don't have a levy requirement for fire after this year. You have to phase in the market losses, and so we have one in 2012.
Yeah. Further question, Representative
Chair.
Murphy?
I'm fine.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in regards to the city of Minneapolis again, if this merger agreement would go through, what would this, I mean, we know what it would mean to you if it doesn't. If it does go through, what does it mean to you as far as your levy?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, currently we would, the city estimates the PRA levy would be about $1.1 million, and then we would not have a levy for fire.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that is a significant benefit to the city of Minneapolis. But and could you please explain for everybody's benefit why you would drop from 22.9 to 1.1? What's the dynamics of that?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, essentially this allows us to stabilize and stretch out the amortization date for police. That's the biggest contributor for us. And so we have been, because of the market losses and sort of the time, we would have the benefit of time for the market to recover. We also benefit from moving to PARA's statutory assumptions. And so the current assumptions in law for these funds are 4% in terms of the salary assumption and a 6% investment return. And so there is a benefit to both the time as well as to the use of the PARA assumptions.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to say thank you for all your good work, and I know that this kind of an agreement coming forward is very, very challenging, and appreciate all of your efforts in doing that and all of your cooperation with getting us the information we need, and I appreciate that very much, Mr. Chairman.
Members, I want to make sure we give Ms. Vanek some time and Mr. Martin some additional time, and then we also want to give time to a couple of folks who have also asked to speak. And as I mentioned, we have to be wrapping this up before 1 o'clock. So is it okay, members? Ms. Representative Murphy.
That's fine, Mr. Chair, but I would like from Ms. Johnston and Mr. Rice or Mr. Ward and Mr. Schreimer, I would like a data sheet that tells the statistics that Mr. Rice addressed, how many beneficiaries, the age of the number of people, the 1,400 lives, the police lives, the firefighters' lives, the beneficiaries' lives. I would like a sheet with that kind of data on it and what the highest receiver will receive and what the lowest receiver will receive and the midpoint receivers or information like that. We had it for the MRF stuff, and that was very helpful to us. And
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Rice?
I've got the actuarial documents here that would answer all those questions and would document this about $21.8 million reduction in property taxes for next year in Minneapolis, or in obligations to these pension funds.
Mr. Rice, I would hope you have a summary of that that would be a little.
Yeah, no, these are individual copies. Yeah, right.
Representative Murphy has a good question, and I would hope that there is a summary so that we don't have to wade through half a ream of paper in order to try and get the.
Mr. Chairman, we will prepare one page and get around to the Pension Commission members individually. That was actually 30 copies, so it's not quite that much. But there is a volume of material on this. We'll condense it down. But it has the beneficiary numbers, and we can get more agents.
Okay, I'm going to call Ms. Vanek next to speak on behalf of the PERA fund.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Daley.
As Ms. Vanek approaches, I'd like to just throw out a couple of comments and some questions or concerns. And that is, first of all, thank you to all the stakeholders. Thanks to Senator Dibble, Representative Dabney, the folks at the City of Minneapolis, the pension funds, everyone working so hard to get us to this point. I know there's been lots of issues and concern over the past year, so your efforts to get us to this point are very much appreciated. Thank you to all police officers and firefighters out there. You do great work. We so much appreciate your protection for all the work that you do. You know, you protect us, and it's important that we protect you. And we know how important pensions are. One of the principles that we have for the Pension Commission is consolidation. And so consolidation is a good thing. That's the direction we want to go in. At the same time, we need to balance our costs and our benefits. We need to keep in mind on one side the police officers, the firefighters. We also have to keep in mind the taxpayers who are funding, paying the bills. We have a fiduciary responsibility to folks on all sides. One of the assumptions, one of the most important assumptions is the assumed rate of return. And this pension commission is planning on meeting this summer, this fall, and next winter to talk about the different principles, to talk about any changes that we might think we need to do, the direction we might need to change. And one of those is that the assumed rate of return right now is 8.5%. With the funds that you're bringing to us today, it's 6%. And that's one of the key drivers, it's one of the key points, it's one of the key differences between your funds and the PERA at 8.5%. So if we were to move as a state, as a pension commission, we were to make that decision this summer, this fall, next winter, to move from 8.5%, which is one of the highest in the country, to, let's say, 8% or 7.5%, that would have a profound impact on what we're doing here today. And we haven't made those decisions. We haven't had that discussion yet. So we're kind of in the middle of that as far as this pension commission goes. So that's it's a bit of a concern to me that we would proceed before we've had those discussions and made those decisions. And the one final thing is the unfunded liability. The way I understand it, there is a significant unfunded liability because the market crash in 2008 didn't help any of us. And this is part of addressing that and correcting it. So with those things in mind, if you could help address some of those, Ms. Vanek, as you testify, and others who come to the table to help us through making those decisions. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Good comments. Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Mary Vanek, Director of PERA. I did provide an email kind of late in the hour as I was going through the bill this morning or the amendment, and want to point out a few things. Ms. Johnston has already mentioned the health care savings account and the fact that it can't, the one that currently exists for the funds cannot be moved into the MSRS account. The federal law doesn't allow that kind of a transfer. There are few active members left, and the bill as written would require a contribution to be reported to us, held in an account by us, and then transferred to MSRS. That seems like a very unnecessary step. So we can easily remedy that with working with staff to clean up that language and set up language which we believe is appropriate to have the trust that the funds currently have set up to administer this provision for them to continue to do so. And Mr. Martin is aware that we have a concern about that and want to deal with that. It creates unnecessary financial reporting requirements for us for a group that will eventually diminish. We don't administer individual reimbursement post-retirement savings provisions. MSRS does that, because the federal law doesn't allow them to swoop this one into their plan, we need to come up with a different arrangement. So that can be taken care of readily. A couple of technical things. The ongoing contribution for the active members that's paid by the city is stated as a monthly value. We simply would like that stated as a biweekly value. It doesn't change the dollar amount, just want it restated because of how administratively we handle that. And I've given that that information to or a request of that to Mr. Martin. We would like some other clarifying language, very technical. The biggest issue is the one that Senator Daley raised. And I note that in my email to Mr. Martin that sections 353.667 and 353.668, subdivision 6 under those two sections, call for the city to make an additional annual payment to PERA calculated on the value of the unfunded liability, if there is one, on the date of merger. And that assumes our 8.5% return. We have asked, and the board has insisted, that we need to have language in there that if that assumed rate is changed by the legislature, that that value is recalculated. If the change occurs during the period of time that payment is being made, because we need to account for that change in a revenue assumption from an 8.5% investment return to something lower. So we have indicated that to the city, to the funds. They are aware of it. And that's the biggest piece, I think, of the policy in this merger bill that we would request be addressed. With the specific, the language calls for us providing mailing addresses to the city and to the fraternal organizations. I have to share with you, I have concerns about opening up that door. We have data privacy in place for us to protect the addresses of our members. And if we all of a sudden are asked to have an exception to that data privacy to provide it to other than the city, who also is under the same protection regulations, I am a little uncomfortable with that. It could open the door to other groups coming forward and asking through legislation that they have that same access. Administratively, we could work with the fraternal organization to figure out a way to do mailings on their behalf that they could fund, but to release those lists is not something we're particularly comfortable with. So I can continue to work with them and your staff on that issue. And then the other issue I have is the effective date. The effective date currently refers to, if this isn't done, I believe, by September 30th, for a merger date of December 30th, then there's like a two months after the final approvals are given, the effective date would kick in. My staff and I were really struggling with how to interpret that. We are suggesting that if this doesn't happen by September 30th, for clearly a December 30th effective date, that our Board of Trustees be allowed to set the effective date in consultation with the groups, like we used to do with the consolidations under 353A.06. That worked very well. And so we could, if we can get it done by December 30th, we will certainly do so. But if we have to delay it a month, we'd like to have that flexibility. I think there's enough I think there's enough motivation here for us to all get this done if, in fact, this moves forward. So we'll work real hard to do that. The other point I wanted to make is that the actuarial information is required to be completed by on or before August 1st. I spoke with our actuary this morning. We are comfortable that if this gets enacted, we will meet that date. Our board has a regular scheduled meeting on August 11th, so we would have an opportunity for timely review of the information to be involved in the approval process prior to the important September 15th date for the city. So I think the timelines work out well, given what we have seen thus far. And then the only other point I want to make is that we have been in discussion with the police fund. They have a couple of staff. We have an opening in our finance division that we have attempted to fill and have been unsuccessful in finding somebody who is well-versed in governmental but also pension accounting, which is a little different. And we have an opening in our customer service division of the pension services division of our office. So we would have... there is an opportunity that we could provide staffing positions for a couple of the people. My understanding is the fire doesn't have anybody that we'd need to accommodate, nor do we have a third position. So I just wanted to make you all aware of that.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Vanek, very much need to address the issues that you've raised, and we can't move this forward unless we've considered those and resolved those kinds of issues as well. I'm going to give just a couple minutes, and then we need to adjourn to a couple of people that requested to be here. Ms. Crockett, I would ask if you would please be brief.
Mr. Chair,
thank you. We're not taking any action today. I think you heard that, so.
Right, and I will keep my comments brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kim Crockett from the Minnesota Free Market Institute. I spoke to one observer this morning looking at this deal who said, the surrendering army is dictating the terms of the surrender. And I'll cut very quickly to reiterating Senator Daley's concerns as well as Mary Vanek's just now. Why is this deal coming to the state in the last few days? If Minneapolis cannot afford these pensions, what makes us think the state will be able to, especially as it heads into serious consideration of the assumptions that go into its own pension plans? And I had planned to discuss the assumed rate of return as well. There's a serious national discussion going on right now about whether or not that 8.5% assumed rate of return is defensible. And I would think it would be possible that very soon the state will reduce it, as Senator Daley said, to 8% or 7.5%. There's also a practice of using balloon payments to push out the unfunded liabilities beyond the years where they were initially actuarially set. And that's another practice that I think may come under scrutiny in the interim or the next session. So if those things change, what does that do to the lump sum payment that's negotiated with the city of Minneapolis to make sure that the PARA funds are made whole and that the taxpayers in Minnesota are not exposed to unfunded liabilities created by the city of Minneapolis? Those would be my major concerns, Mr. Chair. I have other thoughts as well, but I'll hold them for another appropriate time.
Well, thank you, Ms. Crockett. Those issues have to be addressed as well. And then the other person is Lieutenant Sorrell.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
While we are waiting for Mr. Sorrell, just would appreciate if maybe Mr. Bicker could just address the 8.5%. I don't know if we have time for that today.
I think we'll have to hold off on that. We need to get... wrapped up here. Mr. Sorrell.
Thank you. First of all, I'm a director for the Minneapolis Police Relief Association. I was elected unanimously, but I don't just represent them. I'm a police officer, been one for 36 years, so I got to look out for everybody.
Yep.
Okay, regardless of what happens.
Please,
to me.
Please have a say. Have
okay.
a seat.
Got it. First of all, I'd like to give you a little background on the MPRA. We've existed for over 120 years. We've had involved in decades of legislation. Okay? 1970 was the first year the city started to pay into our pension. We paid in from 1890 to 1970. They paid nothing. Okay, we forced them to pay by coming here to the legislature. We have worked with them in cooperation over the years, extending funding dates, 13th checks, which benefit you. We split the money between you and us, and so on and so forth. The last couple years, we have been under attack, and that's part of the negotiation process, beat the other side down into submission. Okay, we've been attacked by Mayor Rybick, basically with half-truths and innuendos. Okay, in my business, a half-truth's a lie. I'm a cop. They've said that we've been mismanaged. They say that we spend too much on administrative costs. Mismanagement? 2 years ago, we were sixth ranked out of 125 public pension funds. This year, we're going to be in the top 25% of public pension funds in performance. That's hardly a sign of mismanagement. As far as administrative costs, there's our administrative cost right there, Renee. Can you stand up for a minute, Renee? That's our administrative cost. How many people here are from the city? That's what we're battling, okay? Most of our administrative costs are because of lawsuits. We worked hand-in-hand with the city up till 2006, and when they got the extending date to 2020, at that point they needed no more negotiations. They sued us, okay? Administrative costs, we froze our travel last year, okay, to cut down administrative costs to help the taxpayers. In a couple weeks, Mayor Rybick's leaving for Amsterdam. Okay, what are the two things people go to Amsterdam for? Okay, on city expense probably, but you can look into that later. The main parts of our pension are we all get half a top patrol, whether we're lieutenants, captains, patrolmen. That's the way it's been forever, and I think that's the best way. Then we have a 13th bonus check, and then the main thing is the escalator, which is our COLA. It's invaluable. That protects us when we retire. Our standard of living will stay the same as it is. Okay? Won't go down, won't go up, won't get rich, won't get poor, but it'll at least stay the same. Here's the deal that they cut. Okay? It started last week. I was not allowed in the room. You can guess why. Here's the facts and the deal from Van Worden Associates. Here's the cost. I'll get into the big numbers. If this current lawsuit gets overturned, the city has to put in $142 million into our pension the next 10 years. If the city wins the lawsuit, they have to still put in, I believe it's $94 million. With this deal, they have to put in $29 million. Bottom line is, we sold a $100,000 house for $29,000. Nice negotiations. And just as an aside, the city's talking about giving a $100 million remodel to the Timberwolves. That's where the money's going to go, okay? As a cop, I've heard lies. You cannot believe all the lies I've heard. Lies, lies, lies. For 36 years, I've heard lies. But the biggest lie I've heard is tax relief for the citizens of Minneapolis. The fact is, since 2005, our raises have been less than 1%, but the taxpayers' increase have been 8%. And it's been blamed on us. There's a 7% difference in there. Where is it going? I don't know. They talk about transparency. You can take our budget, our yearly budget, reduce it down to 8 pages, double space, read it clear and concise. There's all kinds of transparency. And I guess,
Lieutenant, if you please wrap up.
I'm done. The only thing I have to say is this existed for 121 years. And a 5-day negotiations to merge it is nothing but a flim-flam. Everybody knows that. Step back, wait, check everything out, and decide. That's all I ask. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lieutenant. Obviously, from what we've heard today, there are still unresolved issues. And so we're going to adjourn this meeting, and stay tuned, I guess, as to...
I just wanted to make one comment following Senator
Representative
Daley.
Kahn.
Senator Daley's comment, and that was the issue on the assumptions. You know, it's why we've pushed for consolidation. It will really be nice to look at that for one fund instead of having these two major funds out there, because they are different. And I think there's some very good data in terms of what's happened over the past few years in terms of the five-year average, the one-year average, and the fact that compared to many other public pension funds, you know, I mean, it was quite a shock to see in what bad shape Wisconsin was in terms of the lack of contributions from the employees, which we have. I mean, our Minnesota funds are all in really pretty good shape.
Members, a number of us are already late to an important meeting, so we're standing adjourned.